One of your clients said this, and I've been maintaining for a long time. I'm the one that coined the phrase Old Yeller for the Yellow Manual, because I got fond of it after a long time. Had to clean it off two or three times, having thrown it away when I was first learning the methodology. Got some real serious stains on the cover, too, because I think one night we'd been having chili before it went in the basket, you know? But that Yellow Manual, if you go back and reread it, has Thermation EXDC concepts. Don't think of deceleration. Oh, that's the latest. It's just the expressed concept. Now in a computerized, programmatic form that was given to you in the Yellow Manuals. It's all in there. There's nothing that isn't in the Yellow Manual. Everything that's come from there has been an amplification. It's been footnotes. The Yellow Manual is it. Everything else is footnotes on the Yellow Manual. I think that's part of the essence that a lot of people lose. We're hooked up into a society in which we lock on to a very naive 19th century materialistic outlook on reality. And we think the newest or the latest is the best. In this case, because there's no intent to be a systems mill or a manuals mill or what have you. It's all there originally. You can trace back everything that's come to the basic concepts of the Yellow Manual. It's not rules-oriented, this methodology. It's not something that can survive in a rules-oriented atmosphere, because the basic spirit of the methodology, as far as you, is taking people who have a subject mentality, I'm subject to this, I'm subject to that, and making you autonomous, helping you to become autonomous, self-governing. You're not at the mercy of whatever. There are people who have been in jobs they absolutely thought were killing them. got unsolicited couple of hands in the back there. There are people who have been in jobs like I was in that I loved and wanted to be in, but I needed about $50 more a month. Just needed it. I was thinking at the time, my wife and I were talking about starting a family. Couldn't do it on $7,400 a year. That's what the salary was for working with the two churches. Couldn't do it. Figured I needed a little bit more than that. There are folks who have been subject to other people's choices because they didn't have the means to make their own choices and make them stick, or they felt they didn't. A lot of what this methodology is about is not you learning every single thing about all the mathematics, because I don't know that. Those of you that have called me up know that I'm absolutely unabashed in admitting I don't know spit about any of the formulas. I don't really care if I know spit about the formulas. The computer does. Let it be my left brain. I learned all the stuff about early and sustained and all these things. Forgot most of it within about a year. Because the computer did it. I know what the idea is as I look at the readouts. I can see a picture of how that race is going to run. As I look through the racing form, I can see patterns. I can perceive that because I've trained myself to do that. But rules orientation says, if I do this, this, and this, I've got it. As a theologian, fundamentalism is something that irritates me no end, because it says you do this, this, and this, and you're saved. It puts everything down to rules. I think I broke its neck. When I get into the healing service, yeah, yes. You have to pronounce everything with at least nine extra syllables to get that 50,000 watt radio station in Del Rio, Texas. Anyway, one of the basic concepts I find in the methodology is that the shortest distance, I'll get it right, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. The essence of the methodology is not to win horse races. It does that, but that I don't think is really the essence of it. You know, if you win a race and you've got it dutched backwards, and so you have this moral victory of, hey, I won the race. I lost $3.80, but I won the race. That's not the point, is it? To get a short-priced horse dutched backwards? No. Not the point. So winning horse races, that's not the essence. That isn't really the sense of this. Making money. Yeah. Go into the cashier's window, put your money in, put your ticket in, and get money back. That's good. But that isn't really the end of it. You can make money and still not be particularly well-adjusted or happy or able to hold on to it.
hold on to it.
The essence of it is giving you more control, to give you the tools so you can gain control over your life. An interesting thing that Doc has pointed out, many of the letters that come to him, talking about how successful people have become with the methodology, don't mention until it's nearly as an afterthought at the bottom. Oh yeah, I'm driving a 70% average with a 1060 mutual. That's at the bottom of the letter. The whole first part of the letter, paragraph after paragraph, is how much better that individual's life is now. The improvement in their being on this planet. That's what the letter's about. Guess what? That's what the methodology is about. It's about you becoming a winner. Yeah, that may entail making money. Probably will. I've heard people grouse about making real money. Can't make real money betting two horses. Well, I'm sorry, but I figure a couple of $100,000 a year is probably real money to most people. And if you've got a $4,000 bankroll and you work 6-8 months out of the year, you probably could come up with that. I know people that are making $50,000 to $75,000 without working more than a couple of 3 days a week currently, betting two horses. To me, that's real money. My salary now is a full minimum of Albany Presbytery. I make $18,000 because I've been there over 10 years, and they give us a house. Yeah. Two problems with the house. First of all, a derelict wouldn't crawl into most Presbyterian manses to die. These are not choice real estate bargains. Secondly, you can live there, work there, be there for 70 years. The day you quit, the day you lose your home. You have no equity whatsoever. So anybody that tells you that living in, church-provided housing is somehow, well, that's okay, though, they don't earn any kind of money, because, I mean, what the hell, I give them a place to live. We go to school in the Presbyterian church as long as lawyers are doctors. How many lawyers or doctors make a total package of under $30,000 a year? Let's say, how many lawyers or doctors that don't have major problems and personality flaws? I mean, I'm sure there some just can't keep a practice going, but a doctor sees more than, say, 3 patients a week. You know, a lawyer that's handled 2 or 3 cases in the last 9 months. It's a weird way to make a living. I find that I'm given the freedom to be where I feel I'm supposed to be by working with the methodology. And I find the real money, anything over $30,000 in a year, I find that very possible. It's real doable. I find the people that are so preoccupied about how you can't make real money doing this or that generally aren't making any money. Isn't that interesting? You know, why should I listen to somebody carp about how they're not going to be able to become a trillionaire with the methodology, when with the smallest bit of probing you find out they're at a 15, 25 cent heir right now? They're not making money at all. It becomes, I think, or it should become, maybe evident that a lot of the objections that people throw in or throw up have more to do with not wanting to get started, not wanting to get serious about it, not wanting to confront themselves, because that's really what you have to confront to become successful with this methodology. You don't really have to confront numbers. You've got to confront yourself. You've got to get down to the river of your soul and ask yourself, how come I'm not doing so well with this? What stuff am I putting up there? I'm hoping that the relaxation tape that was mentioned in the follow-up, a number of you have it, and people use it to go to sleep with and things like that, it's not the purpose. You know, any relaxation is good relaxation, but you should be able to use this to get to such a relaxed state you can begin talking to yourself, get the internal dialogue going. Why is it? Why is it that I'm putting things in my way? What kind of things, what messages am I playing to myself that will keep me from succeeding? That's what that tape's all about. The essence, to me, of the methodology also works with a sense of going more for the internal than the external. If we understand that we can become a winner, and then we can win horse races, that's vital, because you don't become a winner by winning horse races. You win horse races because you've already become a winner. What do I mean by that? You become a person who is less controlled by the externals. The woulda, coulda, shouldas, the crooked track, crooked racing game syndrome. I'm always amazed by people who really honestly believe that racing is totally crooked. If so, what in the world do you want to be involved in it for? I mean, that's one of those things Aristotle said, Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. Examine that one a little bit. If you think it's crooked, why would you walk toward it? I mean, there's the old joke about the guy that pulls into the western town back in the 1800s, and he sees this roulette wheel, and he's kind of doing this, and he hears the sound of a leather thing underneath pulling it, so that they can make it stop on whatever number they want. And he watches people gambling there for about an hour, and he finally walks over, and he says, "Don't you people realize this wheel is totally rigged?" And they say, "Well, yeah." He says, "Well, then, why in the world are you playing?" They say, "Well, it's the only game in town." It's like the guy that's searching and searching on the dark street. And he's working, it's late night in the city, and he's looking and looking and probing around on nothing but the raw light of this one street light. Down the block, the lights have been shot out, and terrible stuff, and burned out. He's looking around, and some guy comes by and says, what are you doing? Because you can see this man on his knees groping around. The man says, "Well, I dropped a quarter, and I'm looking for it." He says, "Well, just exactly where did you drop it?" Thinking, maybe it would roll. The fellow says, "Well, down the block, about there." He says, "Well, how come you're looking here?" And he says, "Well, the light's much better." Believe me, I've received phone calls from some of you that really sound a lot like that at times. Why is it you're playing the exactas? Guess you're getting rich doing the exactas, and I know you laugh at me, bet you're betting the two horses, Dutching them 60-40, and you got exoticitis. So you must be doing real well at it, huh? Oh, really? Can I take that for a no? You're not doing real well with it? Well, it's kind of wrong. So why are you betting the exact? I know guys will tell me they have the win horse 75-85% of the time. They'll have the win horse. Somebody else always comes up in there, I get one in three. I said, how often does this happen? I says, geez, 75% of the time, 80% of the time, I get one in three. God, I'm going nuts. I said, let me get this straight. You're getting one in three. 75-80% of the time, right? Yeah, one in three, sometimes one in four, but usually one in three. It's driving me crazy. Think about it. One in three, 75-80% of the time, you are betting to win, right? This is long downstate New York pause. I asked him if he'd be happy with, say, $500 exacta hits per week. How would that be? God, that'd be great. $500 hits a week. Terrific. So then I said, well, how about if you use a $2,000 bankroll and you play a couple of days a week and you find, say, four or five playables each day. So you're working 2 3-day weeks, let's say. Each week you'll generate about $1,000 from that bankroll. If your claims are anywhere near what you say they are, that you're getting the one in there that often, you'll have no problem generating at least $1,000 a week. That's the same as if you had two $500 hits from the exacta pool. What's the difference? He had exoticitis. I think also, if you critically examined his claims, probably he didn't have the one in the three 75% of the time. He might have had the two in the three in there a fair amount of the time. He might have had the three in the four, the six and the nine. But he was so hooked on exactas, that's all he could think about. In part, because he knew you couldn't make any real money dutching two horses to win 60-40. The essence of the methodology includes that two-horse Dutch bet because it is easier on you and because it works very, very, very well. You run any computer simulations, and unless you can very dependably bet one horse to win and be raking in a nine-something mutual and you're winning 73% of the time, you really can't beat betting two horses to win. Some folks can. I'm not one of them. I hate having one horse running. Ah. Several races, I let losing races go. You know, you have to do that. Put them back of you. Examine, figure out what you did, and then let it go. You know, do a post-mortem, but then let it go. I have a hard time letting go of three particular races that I've lost because at the gate, one of my two horses got scratched. At the gate.
At the gate.
I lost all three of those races. I had one horse running.
One horse running.
You know, I'm a little superstitious about one horse now.
One horse now.
I like having two horses running. I like betting 40% of the realistic contenders in the race, or 50% of the realistic contenders in the race. Makes a lot of sense to me. To help non-winners become winners, Howard has done an awful lot over the last, going on 17 years, some of which has confused people, some of which has gratified them greatly. If you find yourself being swamped by the numbers, if you find yourself listening to something that Jim can do to produce a pace line where none was before, and you start getting a little bit, your arithmetic starts getting fuzzy in your own mind, pull back a little bit from it. Try to see it in a bigger perspective, a broader context. What is it that Jim was doing in essence? By finding that, by creating that pace line that he did yesterday in the Breeders' Cup race? He's what? A, he had confidence in what he was doing. Very strong point. To be a winner is to have confidence in what you're doing, to know that you have control, to know that you can do the task that you're setting out for yourself. That's competent risk-taking. The other thing he did was a very simple basic principle of the methodology. He used what he had. There's no voodoo involved in that. You know, you look at those pace lines, you look through there. The horse ran this distance. Well, that's like the first call. Gee, he ran this distance. Hey, that's like a second call. And he ran this distance. Wow, that's like a final time. Instead of looking, as most of us might do, and say, oh, foreign horse, big circle over the fact that it's vacant as far as beaten lengths, put a question mark there, put an X through it, use your red highlighter, whatever you want to do to tell yourself, oh, danger, trouble, problem. Jim Bradshaw didn't do that. Jim Bradshaw peered out from underneath that hat and said, well, son of a gun, look here, he's run these different distances. Hey, I bet I can build something out of that. Now, that's genius. That's using both hemispheres of the brain in your work. That's not being just mathematically oriented, because a lot of people who are very mathematically oriented looked at that same race and they didn't do what Jim did. I think that it has a lot to do with living by your wits, this methodology.